Brought to you by North Memorial Health, where customers are treated like family. That means a big smile when you walk in the door and making sure your visit is as pleasant as possible. It's just like your family treats you. Find your healthy family at northmemorial.com/family.
Welcome to another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined here by Ben Gessling and Michael Rand of the Star Tribune. Hi, guys.
Hey, hello. Andrew. How you doing?
Doing well. It's Detroit week, Detroit Lions week.
Yeah.
Detroit versus everybody. The Vikings versus everybody, looking for their first division game, or division win, I should say,
yeah.
In their third division game. The Vikings have 0-3 in the division at stake. We're going to talk about the Vikings offense, confidence in that offense, confidence between members of that offense, and just how different Detroit looks, how difficult Detroit has been at times for the Vikings to play. I suppose we didn't talk about that in our pre-show meeting.
No, we didn't, but we can do that.
Well, we could get into that, officiating, your Twitter questions, and much more. Guys, Kirk Cousins throws for 4 touchdowns.
Sure did.
Stands up there today, addresses the media, and says, look, 2 weeks ago after the game against Chicago, I was trying to tell you guys we were just 1 or 2 plays off.
Mm.
It seemed, though, in that Eagles game, they hit quite a few more than 1 or 2 plays that they hadn't hit before.
Easier to make 1 or 2 plays when you're playing a team that has a suspect secondary and is already missing 2 starters, one of them courtesy of Vikings mole Anderson Dejo.
That's the second podcast in a row you've started off by saying that, by the way, because yeah. You started the post-game podcast by bringing up Sendejo knocking out one of the Eagles corners.
Yeah, for some reason, I just like to take jabs at Anderson Dejo. I can't imagine what that would be about.
But, Ben, that actually starts off the conversation well in the sense that...
Always been a stand-up guy around here.
How much do you believe in what we just saw, and them dismantle a bad Giants secondary, a bad Eagles secondary that for some reason had ambitious coverages and just said, look, we'll let our guys be one-on-one against Thielen and Diggs all day?
Well, I think you certainly would feel better about it if they had done this in a situation that wasn't as advantageous for Cousins to have open throwing windows as what we saw on Sunday when they're missing players and they committed to trying to stop Dalvin Cook first.
The Eagles did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the way they played their safeties, whether it was having a guy out towards the line of scrimmage or playing a lot of cover 4 where everybody's within 10 yards or so of the line, it created windows for Diggs and Thielen to work downfield and created a lot of one-on-one matchups with corners that are going to be in over their heads with those guys. And you're not going to probably see the Lions do that much of that. They play a lot more man. It is an approach that borrows somewhat, although Mike Zimmer said it's mitigated a little bit. Matt Patricia, of course, was the defensive coordinator in New England, so we could see some of how the Patriots played against Diggs and Thielen last year. Paul Pasqualoni is running that defense and has spent some time with Zimmer, so I think he felt like some of the ideas are mitigated by that, but we could see, I mean, they certainly play a lot of man coverage, and we could see them try to just double Diggs and Thielen, which would necessitate the Vikings doing something different on Sunday to try to get the passing game going and try to make the Lions pay for all the attention they're putting on Diggs and Thielen.
Yeah, definitely a different defense. I mean, these last two they've gone up against have not been great. Two things stand out to me from the Eagles game, not to go too far back into that, but the first was that second touchdown to Diggs where both he and Johnson were open by like 10 yards. Like, you don't see that in NFL. That's the most blown of a blown coverage. And part two, I'm mad at myself because last week at this time, I think Zimmer got asked about the Philadelphia pass rush and how they had 10 sacks against the Jets that previous week. And the first thing he said was, yeah, I think they had like 3 coming into the game. And that should have set off alarm bells in my head. Like, he ain't all that impressed with what they've been doing on their front. And I think maybe he thought they could pass on the Eagles or move the ball pretty well on the Eagles, regardless of how bad their secondary is, just because they would have time to throw.
Yeah, we knew going into that one that the Eagles were really banged up at corner, as Ben brings up, human missile Anderson Dejo taking out one of their corners. I just think in general, though, it's a good confidence builder. It came at the right time. And we should talk about the confidence or maybe the lack thereof this offensive coaching staff and Kevin Stefanski were showing in their play calls with Kirk Cousins after that Green Bay game when he throws that interception on first and goal from the 8-yard line as they have a chance to get back into that game. And that really puts it away for them. It's a game-losing interception there. They really responded in the next two games against Oakland and against Chicago with really tepid play calls in the red zone. As Ben pointed out, a QB draw, I think, from like, what, the 8?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like even a 3-yard line thing. It was they were far away from that point. And they just didn't really seem to call plays with confidence in Kirk.
Yeah, we would rather have Kirk Cousins, who is not exactly Kyler Murray, making plays with his feet in the red zone than his arm, at least at that point. But the approach the last 2 weeks has been markedly different than that, and I think that's one of the big things that, A, shows they're a little more confident in him, and, B, shows improvement, because red zone efficiency has never been something he's done terribly well. And the last couple of weeks, in addition to the big plays downfield, he's made a lot of big red zone throws, and they've benefited from that.
Yeah, that's the biggest difference, right? I mean, he can say, boy, we just missed a couple play action plays against Chicago, but just the look and feel of Chicago, especially from Chicago to Philadelphia, you kind of throw the Giants game out the window because the Giants just aren't very good. Philadelphia is supposed to be pretty good, even if their secondary is banged up. This is a team that's supposed to contend for a playoff spot, at least. So to do that against them, to put up 38 points, to have Cousins, you know, throw for, you know, 304 touchdowns, to have, I think, the best total QBR of any QB this week, like, for him to do that against them shows me that he's getting more confident, and they have, you know, their game plan says, okay, you're trying to stop Dalvin Cook. Okay, well, now let's go do this. Let's actually unleash this passing game.
Yeah, and you can't blame the Vikings for playing the teams that, you know, as they say, pop up on their schedule when they do, but it really laid out perfectly in the sense that after that bad loss, play two bad secondaries, get your confidence back going, not only in your quarterback, but in your play caller to call those early shots. That Eagles game was such a departure. Like, forget about the Giants game. That Eagles game was such a departure from what Kevin Stefanski usually does. Those first five games, he hadn't called early downfield shots, or Kirk hadn't thrown early downfield shots more than three or four times in a game. He had 9 first and second down passes against the Eagles that went farther than 15 yards. I mean, those are the kind of things, an aggressive play calling that you see in L.A. You don't see in Minnesota.
And didn't one of you two write that he didn't have a third down on their last two touchdown drives?
Well, Kirk pointed that out after the game. Okay. Yeah, Kirk pointed that out, and it's just those two touchdown drives that sealed the game. They kept driving it downfield, whether it was to Irv Smith or Diggs.
Yeah, you don't get that if you're running a lot. You're going to get into a lot of third and shorts if you're really leaning on the run game.
Yeah,
the first big throw of the game was, I think, on the fifth play when they first went downfield.
That's right.
Yeah. That was the one they missed, or was that the one they...
I think Kirk missed back-to-back shots to Thielen early on there.
Okay.
And then he ended up getting some going. But those runs, even at the beginning of the game, I mean, I think one of them was to Diggs.
Yeah.
It was an aggressive game plan that showed a little more of the playbook than what they had shown before. And not only with taking the deep play action shots, doing the reverses to Diggs, and one where even Diggs looked like he wanted to throw the ball, which might not have been a great idea.
Ball up in the air.
But overall, I like the approach, and I think it's necessary to show that confidence in your quarterback. Even though he's a veteran, you shouldn't need to build up that confidence in him. I think they kind of needed to because of after that bad start when they were 2-2.
Yeah, he's kind of feeling himself right now. You can see that he's got a little bit of that, you know, a little bit of the swagger back. He talked about the "you like that guy" last week. And I think his post-game quote this Sunday, kind of riffing on the whole apologies thing and how we don't do that anymore. And it felt like a playful jab at what Zimmer had said maybe a week ago, where he's saying, "I don't really like that." So I don't know. It's interesting. He's kind of feels like he's...
You don't like that?
Kind of feels like he's... embracing the role of a heel turn almost. Like I still don't feel like the locker room is like this perfect happy place, but maybe this is working for them, this kind of agitation that's kind of created something positive on offense.
I do think we've seen a different Kirk. I mean, what do you think, Ben? I think just in terms of his personality, he's talked about being a little more on edge, and I think you've seen him bring a little more of that attitude to
him. There's been a little more edginess, at least in his dealings with us. I mean, it's still not edginess in the sense of confrontational by any means, but a little more of that Aaron Rodgers call out the attempts to start narratives kind of thing. And I've had enough conversations with Kirk to know that, and I think as with any quarterback, when the narratives get started, and they certainly do at that position an awful lot, and they tend to start, not to pit this as local versus national a whole lot, but they tend to start a lot of times with guys that aren't covering a player every day and tend to make sweeping generalizations about this is what this guy is, this is what he isn't, and you know that works well on talk shows and that sort of thing. But quarterbacks get annoyed with those a lot. We've seen Aaron Rodgers certainly take opportunities to express his opportunity to express his annoyance. I should just say that word in the Favre voice all the time.
By the way, why does Aaron Rodgers these days seem like his default expression is just sadness? Why he doesn't look happy to me at all. He's 5-1.
Because he's throwing to some guy named Lazard.
I guess, but I don't know. Just watching him Monday night, it didn't look like he was having a lot of fun out there. Did not look like he was just a kid out there having fun.
Not like a kid out there trying to make plays.
Did not look like that to me. Anyway.
That's how I played the game.
Wide receivers were
like
not
make a play.
Donald Driver or Greg
Jennings.
Like
that's
pick
true.
Pick those guys up and do the fireman carry. And I know. Come to the sideline and say, put her on the old vice. Remember that when he always used to do that with the handshakes? And maybe, just to splice it up a little bit, I'd slap somebody on the rear end.
To your point, though, about Cousins, you're right. He's he
not slapping anybody in the rear end,
more,
Michael.
But he's not slapping
anybody.
I didn't
see any butt slapping on Sunday.
As far as I know, I don't know. Maybe it's Pizza Ranch. Who knows what's fueling this? He's got some spice to him, though. He's got some spice to him lately.
He does. You're talking about, are we talking about Cousins or Rodgers?
Talking about Cousins.
Yeah. I do think Cousins has, and I think it's a good thing for him. Now, the question is, can he maintain it? We've seen stretches, even when he's in Washington, of being able to play at a higher prolific clip when they asked him to, and then he wasn't able to maintain that for a longer duration. So you don't want him peaking in October if you're the Vikings.
No, Mr. October.
You want him to be Mr. December and January if you're the Vikings. And I think that was a good sign that after where the season started, after you left September where the season was at, I think it's gone about as good as they can, as good as it could have gone in these 2 weeks.
Do you want to be able to make plays when the weather's cold? In other words.
You do.
I made a few of those.
This Detroit game, I don't know. I mean, it feels really important, and it's in a weird kind of way because I don't think people think of Detroit as like this big threat, but I think they're pretty good. And you can't go to 0-3 in the division and expect to win the division. Like even if you're 4-3 and you're theoretically like not that far behind, like you're. Your chances of winning any kind of division tiebreaker if you start 0-3 in the division, even if you got three home games left, are pretty much a shot. So, I mean, this is kind of like we talked about last week. This is one of those kind of like defining games where you'll go back at the end of the season and say, okay, either the win or the loss was, one of the ones that made the difference between playoffs or no playoffs.
Yeah, this Detroit game is taking on a different shape than last year. Remember last year, Vikings go there in week 16. Matthew Stafford reportedly playing with a broken back. I think they had sacked. Matt, what are you counting up, Ben?
I'm trying to count up the number of times Mike Zimmer has lost in each NFC North venue. The only reason I bring that up is because you typically, I think over the years, you think, oh, the Lions are sort of the little sister of the division. And a lot of times they have.
The easier of the games.
Right,
yeah.
Because the venue isn't as mythic and you don't have the narratives about how tough it is to go there. But
I think if we're being honest, though, the narrative about Cousins isn't going to change until the second half of the year, if it's going to change at all.
It only has a chance to change if they win this game. I mean, I just don't know if you can drop this game and then even if you beat Washington and go to 5-3, like you're 0-3 in the division.
I don't even think the narrative changes that much if he wins this game and wins the Washington game. I just feel like everyone's still kind of waiting for
a win at Kansas City,
Dallas,
Seattle.
Seattle, those 16-17 against Green Bay and Chicago. I mean, that's kind of it. You can put yourself in position by winning this game, and it's a step in the right direction. It's probably more confidence. And then Washington, nothing's automatic, but that feels like a game they should be able to win, as close to automatic as you can get in the league right now. But, nobody's going to believe fully until they go on the road in a primetime game and have some kind of success.
I think he knows that. I mean, I've talked with him enough, and he's talked about, if you have built the resume of Brady or Rodgers or, even guys like Russell Wilson that have won consistently, if you have a game or a year even where you're not on, people say, okay, he's done this enough that we can trust that this was a blip on the radar. Sometimes I think that is a little bit of grass green on the other side. I think Aaron Rodgers would tell you that when you've done it for that long and then you have a blip,
we've spent
a lot of the what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers bullets in recent years. So there's everybody can always say that it's easier on the other side of things, but I think one of the points he has made is that you have to earn the right to have a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, and he knows he doesn't have it yet.
Yeah, this Lions game is going to take on a little bit different of approach from last year even. The Vikings went up there last year, struggled mightily offensively in Kevin Stefanski's second game as play caller. four straight three and outs at Ford Field before Kyle Rudolph caught a Hail Mary touchdown just before halftime to put them up in that game. Then they end up closing that game out, and it looks like an easy win when it really wasn't.
They had like negative 5 yards at one point in the second quarter or something like that.
That was Rudolph's last catch.
It was almost.
It was his last touchdown. He had more. I think he had more catches and more yards in that game than he does this season.
That wouldn't surprise me because going into last week, it was just 6 for 36. And I know he caught two balls.
I think he caught three.
Week?
So okay. I think he was 9 for 105
at
in
Detroit
that game.
Last year. Yeah.
So I think he's maybe the same in catches now. I believe he's at 9 for the season. Yes, he is. And he has 72 yards for the season. Zero touchdowns.
Zimmer's talking today about how Rudolph has made himself a better blocker. I mean, maybe that's honest coach talk. Maybe some of that's building Rudolph up. You know, but this could, you know, we keep saying this could be the week that he has more impact. But if we're talking about a Lions defense.
9 for 122 last year.
If we're talking about a Lions defense that might be more inclined, like Belichick, to try to take away Diggs and Thielen, maybe this is a game where Rudolph has to get more involved.
I thought it was interesting. On the conference call that we have with Matt Patricia, we have every week.
There was interesting things from that?
There actually was. One of the interesting things was
how was your posture during the call?
It was great. I stood up straight, talked to the machine, the conference call box.
Defend the honor of Michael Rothstein.
With discipline, yeah. And respect.
My guy.
Anyway. I love that in 2019, by the way, you guys are still standing around a speakerphone for that.
Yeah, right. And yelling at it. Yeah. Hey, coach, can you talk about that? Yeah.
It's the same as like the mid-90s when I...
Is there somebody that yells on those calls?
Yeah, there might be.
Anyway, you had a point to make.
Matt Patricia, unprompted, when he was actually talking about the Vikings' talented skill position players, brings up obviously the three and Thielen, Diggs, and Cook. Unprompted, brought up Irv Smith and said he felt like Irv Smith is kind of catching on now and becoming the weapon that they want him to be. Irv had a big catch against the Eagles. Yep. I do think we could see him starting to become more involved as you bring up the Lions potentially paying more attention to Thielen and Diggs. Now, they've got the talent at corner. They've got a lot of guys in there, whether it's Justin Coleman, who I believe was a former Vikings guy, undrafted free agent out of Tennessee, who went to the Patriots and followed them to Detroit. He's really talented in the slot role. You've got Darius Slay on the outside. You've got talented safeties in Detroit that I think are much more up to the task than the Vikings are used to seeing this month.
Justin Coleman was a camp body or practice squad guy? I think he was here a couple, maybe two camps.
I think he got if my memory serves me right, he got waived after his first camp, and someone grabbed him for their active roster right away.
Yeah,
it might have been New England.
Between Justin and Kurt, the Vikings have missed out on a couple of
Colemans
that have turned into solid defensive backs in the NFL.
Either way, I thought it was interesting. An opposing defensive minded head coach brings up Irv Smith. I do think that's a guy that we could see get a little bit more involved, especially if he's figuring out things as a receiver where they can trust him more. But overall, they need to get Dalvin Cook involved, and they need to make sure that Kirk is not flustered by a defensive front that might be just as strong as Philadelphia's or Chicago's.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and it still is weird to me that they paid that much for Rudolph this year and then just haven't really deployed him that much or have, you know, it was puzzling at the time. Maybe it's the continuity thing, but
I think they paid just as much for a mentor as anything else.
Well, and we should talk about what they paid. I mean, a lot of that contract is money that he has to produce well enough to earn. I mean, there isn't much guaranteed money after this year. He gave back some cap space this year in exchange for a little bit of guaranteed money, which he didn't have coming into this year. But some of it is they put years on the back end that it's possible he won't see. I mean, that's going to be one of the questions that comes up with him after the season. And that's one of the things that I'm curious to talk with him a little bit more about later in the week. I mean, writing a little more about him later in the week and the way he's embraced this role of blocking more often. He, I think, is on pace to have more snaps as a blocker and fewer routes run this year than any year since he was a rookie, certainly in terms of the route running snaps. And he's had a couple years where he was hurt in there, but you project it on a per-game basis. Certainly he is less of a factor in their passing game than he has been really since he was a rookie. I think it's probably the way you could confidently say that. But they have needed more from him, both as a run blocker and in some of these routes. Like, Andrew, you pointed out in your film piece, the Yankee concepts they run, which is a Mike Shanahan thing, certainly something I think Kyle Shanahan had a lot of success with that in Atlanta when he was the offensive coordinator there, when they scored so many points before blowing the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. that typically, I think it's a 2 or 3 man route, and a lot of times
with max protection.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're running for 7 man protection, so that requires him to not even be part of that. So, that has been part of the way they've approached it, and to this point, has taken a pretty big bite out of his numbers.
Yeah, it really has. So I don't imagine we're going to see a 2-touchdown, 100-yard game from Kyle Rudolph on Sunday in Detroit. But they do have Detroit, the defenders, to match up with the Vikings. So it should be an interesting day for them. Now let's talk about the Lions' offense. That's also different. Familiar friend of the state, Daryl Bevel.
Orville Burville.
Orville Burville is actually – where did that come from again?
Sid. Didn't Sid call him that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Orville Burville. Orville Redenbacher.
Never forget. Hashtag never forget.
Daryl Bevel.
Jim Caldwell used to be the coach there too.
That's right. Wow, another Sid story.
Can we tell that story?
No, let's not. Another former. Which? That's just the one about where he thought. Okay, yeah, no, we can.
Can
that's
we tell
right.
that story? We yeah. should tell that story.
Yeah, go for it.
So, Sid, this that. Is before Frazier had to switch defensive coordinators. I think maybe before 2012. Okay. Fred Puggish left. Sid had gotten a tip that they were going to hire the guy from Indianapolis to be the defensive coordinator. So Sid took that to mean Jim Caldwell, who has, of course, been an offensive guy. Sid was adamant that they were hiring Jim Caldwell. And Dan Wiederer, who was the beat writer at the time, and Mark Craig, who was still here, is like, no, Sid, I think it's Alan Williams, the defensive backs coach. And Sid was adamant, again, that it was Jim Caldwell, and you guys don't know what you're talking about. And I've been told this is the guy, and it's the guy from Indianapolis. That means Caldwell. So I think Dan got Leslie Frazier on the phone to tell Sid, no, it's Alan Williams.
He actually got a head coach before the news came out.
Yes.
To correct Sid.
Yeah, and the means by which he corrected him was yelling the name Alan Williams into the phone repeatedly because Sid couldn't hear what he was saying. So then Sid gets off the call. And Dan and Mark, I think, are waiting outside. And they said, so? And so, yeah, it's Alan Williams. Caldwell wanted too much money.
I was not ready for that punchline.
Yeah,
the punchline is the best
sorry
part.
Sorry if I yelled into the microphone,
Sid,
everybody.
Sid couldn't still admit, I didn't have the right name.
Caldwell wanted too much money.
Nope, there went another way. the offensive coach
that's amazing.
That has made a career of that wanted too much money to be the defensive
that's
coordinator.
That's amazing. That's a
it's
great
like,
story.
It was like Sid did, though. He matured in his years because 6 years later, he was in the locker room last week, was it? And he was talking to somebody, and he confused him for somebody else, as you know, happens to a 99-year-old. And I think he turned around to a laughing group of beat writers who were ever so graceful about his aging and said, you know, if you were 99, you'd F up too or something, or something
really?
Like that. Yeah, he
I missed
did.
That.
Anyway.
This is willing to
he owned it.
He did.
I mean,
yeah,
you
he
know
owned
what?
It's hilarious.
If I'm 99 and a half, and still moving around that well.
March.
It's pretty good.
March is 100.
That is pretty good. All right, what were we talking about?
We were talking about the Lions offense, which is
Lions
different.
Offense.
I mean, they've got some weapons there. The running game is better. The Galladay, Marvin Jones. I mean, Stafford's been there for a long time, but they do some things. I mean, they move the ball against Green Bay. They kick 5 field goals?
Yeah.
Zimmer was very complimentary of Stafford. I mean, it always has been, but it was very complimentary of Stafford, I think, with the Lions reporters this morning.
Yeah. Daryl Bevel has brought kind of more of that run, play, action balance, kind of what the Vikings are trying to do, what Daryl Bevel ran for years in Seattle. That's kind of what he's brought to that Lions offense, and it's made Stafford less of a pocket passing, drop back, throw from the same spot every time quarterback, makes him harder to rush. Kind of what they were trying to do with Kirk this offseason. So I think with Stafford, you put that arm talent back there in that kind of a system, he's throwing deeper passes than he ever has. He's averaging 8 yards a throw, which would be a career high if it goes throughout the entire year that way. Kenny Galladay is ranking top 10 in yards per catch. He's up to over 15 right now. They are a dangerous offense that's trying to commit to the run, but right now Kerryon Johnson has just a little over 3 yards a carry. He's been pretty ineffective. I don't know if it's their offensive line issues or what, but right now it's been Matthew Stafford or kind of bust for that offense. They're just doing it in a different way.
Maybe it should be Kerry Less Johnson.
Wow.
If he's not carrying him.
I actually got Mike, I was on a different podcast. I need to tell you
Wait,
this.
Wait, what?
I was on a different podcast. I know I cheated.
Seems kind of
I was on a different
podcast. Just finding out about it now. But
I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go on.
I was on a different podcast during the Chicago week, and somebody brought up your Mitch line unprompted.
Really?
I'm 100% that Mitch.
Yeah.
And they said they liked it.
Oh, well, that's good.
So you got fans.
Got fans in Chicago?
In low places, yeah.
Low places. I like it. Good. Yeah. Good to hear. That's good to know.
Anyway.
You guys are still mad that I set it up improperly, though, that I told you guys that I'd been thinking about that line for a week and that I admitted that.
Yeah, you should have just dropped it.
I mean, the truth hurts, Mike.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow. Uh-huh. Wow. Wow.
Together.
New man on the Minnesota Vikings.
Wow.
Songs. I mean, is it sacrilegious to say that Lizzo is getting overplayed? I mean, like the way it was with Prince.
I like Lizzo a lot.
I like the song. I like Lizzo in general, but we hear that song a lot at Vikings games.
Of course. I mean, if you reference the Minnesota Vikings, they're going to play it. I mean, Green Bay, they beep out the word on the Green Bay radio station.
That's right.
Hilarious to me still.
All right, guys, let's talk about something a little less controversial. NFL officiating.
Oh, yeah. That's
Then Lizzo fatigue.
Yeah, then Lizzo, because that's very controversial.
It is very controversial. I'm going to get nasty tweets about that.
You are. NFL officiating kind of hosed the Detroit Lions in Green Bay, where they lost at the very end. Now, the Packers still could have kicked a go-ahead field goal had Trey Flowers not been penalized there. It's just Matthew Stafford would have had a minute to do what he does often, which is lead his team back from the very end. So the Vikings have approached it the way that, you know, every team does, every smart team, by saying, hey, we're not going to talk about it. I just in general feel bad for these guys when they're put in spots because they have to answer for things where officials might be made available to a pool reporter at the end of a game.
Yeah.
But there's no official press conference. Players have to answer for these blown calls. Coaches have to answer for these blown calls. They all might get fined for answering questions to these blown calls. They're all told not to.
Yeah.
And yet all we hear from Troy Vincent is just, that was a screwed up call. Sorry, Lions take an L.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten to the point where it feels like it's, I mean, I don't know, is it tainting the product to a certain degree? Are people viewing the games differently? It felt like that Monday because guys like Desmond Howard right after the game, former Packer, saying, you know, check these
Super Bowl MVP.
Check these guys' bank accounts. Like, okay, that was pretty strong. You got like Tony Dungy and Barry Sanders are upset about it. Like, these are like the two of the like least controversial guys in the history of the NFL. Like if they think it's a problem or that a team is, you know, or that the teams are getting unfairly penalized, I mean, I don't know. Is it because we see everything so more clearly now on, you know, high def and millions of replays and everything, the stakes feel higher to everything probably, but I don't know. They're probably calling too many penalties.
They also add a new thing to this every year, and you put players in positions where it's more difficult not to commit a penalty, and you put officials in positions where they have to spend more time looking for little things that they're told to emphasize and then are hard to see and officiate in real time.
And they don't do it uniformly.
No.
So week two at Green Bay, Dalvin Cook gets the OPI added onto a scoring replay. That has not happened since, I think.
I think there's only been like one successful pass interference challenge since week
three. They've moved that bar quite a bit.
So then in the preseason when they're overturning some of them and Mike Zimmer's trying to get a feel for it, he then says in the regular season, I still got to be aggressive with the challenge flags because I still don't know how they're going to call it. And then 2 weeks in, he goes, they're not going to flip over any of these. I need to stop flagging it. It's just they don't do it uniformly. And so you're right. They keep emphasizing things. I mean, we were walking back from the open locker room session today discussing, was that a penalty on Trey Flowers for getting his hand on the neck? Kind of, but it was in the collar. Are you allowed to grab the collar?
The first one was a penalty. The second one was not.
And so it's just – but the lack of clarity on a week-to-week basis and how big that rule book is, it's just – it's a nightmare. And I can't imagine how hard it is for defenders to just play this game now.
I think the best thing they could do would be to tell officials across the board – don't call anything unless it's really, really egregious or obvious.
Especially in that key moment.
Just anytime. Right? I feel
third
like
down, end
I
of the
feel
game,
like most
Lambeau.
People are going to be, you know, with some obvious caveats that can be reviewable, like last year's pass interference. You know, that was pretty obvious in the NFC title game. But with the exception of obvious penalties, I think most people would be happier to a degree with a controversial non-call than a controversial penalty that influences a game. Like, boy, was that pass interference? I don't know. Like, but hey, they let him play it out versus, oh, was that a little bit of holding? Maybe. But, you know, if you don't throw the flag, it feels like letting the players kind of solve it and figure it out and determine these games more on their own is probably the easiest way to just kind of work your way out of this box. Like, they're calling 18 penalties a game. They call eight.
I feel like it's got to be. It's almost like the NBA, where once you get to a certain time limit, it's almost like anything goes. Almost. I mean, yeah, to within reason.
Or playoff hockey too.
Yeah, but once you get into
overtime,
1 or 2 minutes left, or inside a minute, or a possession left, they don't call the travel. They don't call the overhand. You know, they don't call the little things that you might call in the first quarter. Whereas NFL officiating, they don't seem to have learned that the cruise over time, because you're still getting that call in the pivotal moment for Green Bay or for Detroit. I mean, you still get that call where it makes no sense.
The thing I wonder too is if you're going to get all of these coaches so conditioned to, I can't challenge a pass interference because they're not going to overturn it. Are we going to end up in the same spot in a playoff game that we did, that started this whole exercise last year, where there's going to be a pass interference and then somebody says, well, I would like to challenge that, but I need my timeouts because it's a close game and I can't waste my challenge? I mean, you know, maybe at that point you say, screw it. This is the reason the league created the rule and they're going to get it right to save face in this situation. But I mean, you wonder too if coaches are going to be too gun shy to even initiate the process. I mean, Zimmer was one of many coaches that was in favor of the sky judge approach, where it's somebody up top buzzing in saying, nope, this is something we need to look at again and let's make a decision that way, rather than coaches having to initiate the process with a challenge. But they got overruled by the people that make the decision, and the owners voted to approve this, including the owners of the Vikings.
Yeah, what is wrong with that approach on doing that, you know, sky judge, as they like to call it, which just sounds, that sounds like a Steven Seagal movie.
Do they feel like there's going to be more reviews?
Yeah, it just feels like that's, if you, it's a trend towards more legislation, more stoppages, more piecing apart this live action. I don't know. I don't think that's the way they're going to solve it. I think the way they're going to solve it is to just let them play. Like Tom Brady said, like, just call the obvious stuff and let everything else go and just play football.
Who stars in the new action movie Sky Judge?
Good question.
I mean, Skyfall was a James Bond movie.
Right.
Sky Judge is much more
crappy. Yeah, you're right. It's Van Damme.
Crappy, like Fast and the
Stallone, maybe.
Mid-90s, just ridiculous action sequences. You're like, there's no way that could ever happen without three people dying.
What was that Bruce Willis, Wesley Snipes movie? Was it that 90s movie?
Wow, you think of
Fifth
Demolition?
Element. Fifth Element?
Fifth Element. For some reason, when I picture Sky Judge, I picture Fifth Element.
I think you're going to say Demolition Man. I think
Wesley
Snipes and Sylvester Stallone.
That's a great one. Yep, I picture something like that. Very, you know, straight to blockbuster kind of thing. So.
I'll just go to the theater.
No more blockbusters.
That's true.
Straight to blockbuster.
No more blockbuster.
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying, I pictured a crappy movie. So I think
that's one of those things we should have thought twice about before we all got rid of it, by the way.
Yeah.
Blockbuster.
Blockbuster?
Yeah. You can't find like the mid-level 90s and 2000s movies anymore anywhere. Those aren't on Netflix.
You have to buy them digitally, I guess, and pay $4, but there's not cheap deals anymore. I think there are certain things that we should have thought before we digitized everything.
I don't want driverless cars.
Print newspapers.
Just going on a record.
We should have thought about the benefit of digitizing versus what we are losing by getting rid of them.
I think
Blockbuster would be very high on my list.
Yeah, I didn't want to have that adult conversation. I think Vin Diesel would have been a good guy.
We better do some Twitter questions and get Ben out of here.
Yeah, let's do some Twitter questions here. What do you got?
A statement of the week.
What do you got, Mike?
Well, you mentioned
four questions, I think, and a statement, kind of like Four Weddings and a Funeral, a 90s romantic
movie.
Comedy.
You can't find it anymore, which is maybe just as well. Nick says,
tied it all together.
Is the inconsistent game plan on offense? He says, I don't think that's a good sign. I feel like this team doesn't really have an offensive identity due to it changing week by week. What do you say?
I would disagree with that and say that I think the good teams can adapt based on what they're facing. And I think this Vikings team, I mean, look at it. They've got $30 million cap hit at quarterback. They've got almost $30 million in equal cap hits tied up in two wide receivers. They've got one of the NFL's best running backs. Like, you should be able to pivot what your focal point is, what your spearhead is week to week, and depending on who you're facing. So I don't think that's a lack of identity. I think when they talk about, you know, the coaches like to use the word marrying the run game and the pass game, I think when you talk about that through the play actions, it should be able to focus one way or the other week to week. And now the question is, once you face a really good defensive front that also has good coverage on the back end, how do you approach it then, and can you overcome that great defense, like, let's say, against Chicago? So I think there's many questions to be answered still, but I don't view that as a weakness, that it's quote-unquote inconsistent game plan.
Interesting question from Joel. When Mike Hughes is 100% healthy, and maybe he is or is close to. Should the Vikings consider starting Hughes over Rhodes and using Rhodes for matchups with bigger, slower wide receivers? He's the only liability on defense right now.
Well, that's just not true.
That he's the only one, or that he's a liability?
That he's the only one. Okay. I mean, that's just not true. Okay. I mean, guys are liabilities in certain spots.
Of course.
I mean, that's why you don't see Anthony Barr matched up on a running back too often.
Is Rhodes their best cornerback right now? Is maybe a better way of framing this.
Yeah, we had this conversation with Chip after the game, and I don't know who is. I think it's argued between Hughes and McKenzie the way they're playing.
Mike Zimmer was very complimentary of Trey Waynes.
Yeah, he's been pretty good, I think.
Maybe Waynes was targeted 11 times on Sunday. I think he gave up 4 catches for like 69 yards. So maybe – thanks. Maybe he's figuring with that many targets, he did have a nice game. Because he didn't give up that many catches. But he got burned, I think, on a couple downfield shots, and I think got beat on that touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey, too. But
the Jeffrey play was – he was, like, scrambling.
He volunteered that maybe he'd seen that other people had said that they didn't think Waynes had a great game, and he was trying to jab back at that. I don't know. But
I think Waynes has been pretty good this year. I think overall, just eye test-wise.
He got away with a couple holds, I thought, on Sunday, too. I mean, he had a couple where he was fighting the guy downfield.
Sure.
Receivers were looking for holes.
Good no calls in my new NFL.
Speaking of confidence, though, just when we're talking about Kirk and the offense, I don't think you should. I don't think that's the smart play with Xavier. Because when they talk about him playing poorly, Mike Zimmer brings up the lack of concentration at times. It's more of a mental thing. You probably shouldn't have to be wary of playing mind games with your top paid corner, but I would continue to start him because he hasn't been that massive of a liability. Look, we're not talking about a guy who's getting beat downfield every play. It's just like a play a game where it's like, you know, that happened again with him. I think I would mix in Hughes the way he's been playing and keep using him the way he has been because it's been really good.
I don't think Joel watched a lot of 2013 Vikings games because Xavier Rhodes would have been the best cornerback on that field by far.
And they used him mostly in nickel situations, if I recall. They moved Josh Robinson to the slot and brought Rhodes onto the field and told Antoine Winfield to go pound sand up a flea's ass.
Mike wants to know, how confident are you that the recent good play by the Vikings O-line will continue, or should we embrace for an emotional roller coaster?
Sounds like a hard-bitten Vikings fan right there.
Yeah, I want to combine that with another question I saw earlier. Actually, there's multiple offensive line questions. One, should Brian O'Neill move to left tackle? And two, is there a chance Rashad Hill can start going forward? So a lot of offensive line questions.
Yeah, I like the Brian O'Neill angle. I think it's one that they were considering in the offseason when thinking of moving potentially Riley Reiff inside if they were to draft a right tackle, sign a right tackle. They had brought in a former Falcons free agent they were looking at as a tackle option this offseason. I think it's something they were thinking about, and I wonder moving forward if that is an option. Maybe they would just draft their future left tackle next year instead. Brian's been really good on the right side. I had read ESPN's got this pass block and pass rush win loss metric that they do. And I think before the Eagles game, Brian was in top 10 among tackles in win rate. He just hasn't gotten beat often. And he's continued to ascend from where he was last year. I don't think you've seen a massive improvement as a run blocker, but maybe incrementally to eyes more trained than mine, they can see that. But I think in general, he's just been really good for him. So I no matter where he's at, right or left side, it looks like they've hit in that late second round.
One more from Steven, who says, this is a good one for you, Ben. How do year-end salary performance escalators work against the cap? Like if player X makes a $100,000 bonus for X amount of touchdowns, how do the Vikings pay that with negative $50,000 or $50,000 left in cap space?
Well, that gets sorted out in a credit essentially at the end of the season. The accounting for that essentially happens heading into next year. You'll see adjustments to a team's cap space based on things that happened in the previous year, and that's essentially what happens, is that the player will get his money, and then it will be credited or debited depending. Obviously a player's getting paid mean that you take away cap space from a team, but sometimes there's adjustments that a team gets some cap space back for something that they had paid out ahead of time. If it is a likely to be earned incentive, meaning an incentive that they hit the previous year, it is counted against the cap now.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that, because what's to stop a team who's like loading up for a championship run to signing a guy to $1 million base salary with $15 million in incentives?
That's basically how it works. Okay. If it's not likely to be earned, meaning you didn't do it last year, it does not count against the cap at the moment. Those are more for incentives than base escalators and things like that. But the if you have something like that that a player hits, the accounting for it usually happens after the fact, and then you go back and fix the books from the previous year, and you adjust the rollover space heading into next year.
Andrew, you got any more before I get to the chicken
finger statement? No, Mike, I think you got to get to that statement.
Yeah. Chicken finger statement. Elf line at guard isn't working, speaking of offensive line, but they currently don't have a better internal replacement. Debatable. And you can't move him back to center and kick out your first-round draft pick, but you can't just sit there and do nothing and hope it all works out. Hope is not a strategy. Effenheimer.
So what the crux of it is he's not buying Pat Elflein right now at left guard.
Yeah.
I think Pat has played a little bit better, but he has struggled. Hasn't really been the same guy he was his rookie season.
No.
I'm not exactly sure what it is, but he just looks
Drew
like...
Drew Samia at some point?
He gets beat quickly. But Drew's not even active.
No, I know.
Dakota's the guy.
Yeah. Is Dakota the guy because they trust him to be a swing guy that can come in on game days when you need him in a pinch at either spot? Or do they feel like he's better than Samia? That we don't know. We just haven't seen Samia in a game. But
I think if Samia were like game ready now, they'd have him at least active.
Yeah, they probably would.
So to me, it's
I know
like,
they liked him. But
they're grooming
like
him.
How
soon is he ready, basically?
Yeah, to me, Dakota's the guy they would replace him with.
Well, they have. But, right? I mean, not permanently.
Well, when he's injured.
When he's injured, yeah.
I don't know. It's been a disappointing run for the guy right now in his third season. And if you're the Vikings, you're hoping he can salvage something because he is like physically, he's a fit. It's just if he can ever figure it out technique wise and put it all together mentally. I think they were hoping getting the pass protection responsibilities off his plate would kind of help him play faster.
Yeah.
And you're not seeing a ton of that right now. So yeah,
I certainly thought he'd be farther along.
Interior of their line is definitely the biggest question mark still on this team. And that was the question last year, too.
Yep.
And keep in mind, as we brought up earlier, Trey Flowers had a pretty good game against Pat when Belichick decided, hey, I'm going to move my best pass rusher over your center and rush him that way. And it worked out really well for New England. Now Trey Flowers being in Detroit, maybe Matt Patricia tries to move Trey inside and rush him against Elflein and Bradbury. We'll have to see. Mike Zimmer did say that, hey, maybe we could see some of that moving forward. All right, does Brett Favre have any closing words for us?
I mean – you know, my first playoff win was in the Pontiac Silverdome. Made a throw to Sterling Sharp. You know, one of my all-time great throws. I'd love to talk about it. But, you know, it just came down to trying to make a play.
Maybe you should get off the podcast.